Hello, welcome to Center St. Sister. On Center St. Sister, we might laugh or cry, we might get angry or motivated, we might grieve or celebrate, and sometimes all of those things can happen in the very same episode. We are a community of spiritual searchers who embrace Jesus's example of making a beeline to the hurting. Whether an episode is spiritual in nature, purely educational, or just for fun, my hope is that you finish the episode feeling hopeful. I hope you hear something today that lets you know you are loved and helps you love one another. Welcome to Center St. Sister. When I first had babies, my hopes for them were simple. I wanted them to love God and I wanted them to love themselves. And as I've been parenting, I have realized that those things aren't really all that simple. Because so much goes into raising humans, especially as they become teenagers. There are a few things that I've been observant enough to know that I need more of. I am very thick in the middle of cohabitating with adolescences, and here are a few things that I've been hoping for more of. One of the things that I've been reminding myself on repeat is to have more compassion. I've been hoping for more compassion because our teens' bodies and brains, it's very much under construction. The rational part of a teen's brain isn't fully developed, and it won't be until age 25. In teen brains, adult brains, they work differently. Adults think with their prefrontal cortex, the brain's rational part, and teens process information with their amygdala, the emotional part. So long story short, maybe if you ask your teen, what in the world were you thinking? And they answer you with, I don't know. It might just be the honest to God truth. I've been hoping for more compassion. Another thing that I've been hoping for is good communication, because I absolutely believe that we can talk in a way that our kids will listen, and we can listen in a way that our kids will talk. And I feel like a lot of that is just being available, because my teens, at least, are usually operating on their very own schedules, and they tend to open up unexpectedly. In my experience, our best talks, they've been casual. They've been unplanned. Another thing, and this has been hard, but I've been hoping to listen without too much of an agenda, trying not to teach every time. No, not never, of course, but my kids are more likely to open up if they feel like not every word out of their mouth is being analyzed. Sometimes I'll even straight up ask, is this a time that you want my help or do you just want me to listen? This is quick and obvious, but I've been hoping to be a really good example. Our kids, they watch me for a living, and not only does that make them great at pushing my buttons, but it also makes them really great mimickers. So I've been trying to do more of talking about how I make decisions or letting them in on some of my processes, playing games like would you rather or what if, and definitely apologizing to them if I feel I've made a mistake. And then when I am angry, trying not to lose control. If I'm angry, and maybe it's even in an expressive way, I've been hoping to do that without losing control. The last thing that I've been hoping to do more of is seeing a full picture, looking beneath their mistakes or their bad behavior to see what might be motivating it. For example, I might be having a conversation with my teenagers about, I don't know, curfew or chores or something, right? And then they might start ignoring me or being rude somehow. Well, the rules that I come up with, they don't have a lot of control over that. But ignoring me while I give undesirable information, it might give them a sense of power. And so now the argument, it's turning into something that they can control, which is being rude. Is it possible to sidestep some struggles by getting underneath misbehavior and having frank conversations about what they might be really feeling or coping badly with some of their emotions? I think it is possible, I am hoping, that arguments don't have to shift if we can really get to the heart of the matter. If they're feeling a little powerless right now, what are some decisions that we could make together? If they're seeking independence or a thrill, what are some healthy ways to do that? All in all, whether it's compassion or communication or calmness or understanding, what have you, all I know is that I want to be the kind of parent where if my kid does something horribly wrong, that they don't say, oh my gosh, my parent's going to kill me. But instead they say, oh my gosh, I really need my parent right now. So I am needy, And I am in the middle of this. I am no expert. And I have felt that it is crucial to get as much support as I can. And one of my favorite places for that right now is Dr. Ann Louise Lockhart. This next hour of a conversation is full of wisdom and compassion and so many pro tips. You're going to love every second of it. Hello. Good morning, Dr. Lockhart. I am so grateful to have you on the show because you have been such a delightful find and such a deep well of wisdom on the internet for me. You've been such a fun follow because I am thick in the middle of raising teenagers. And there was something about raising young, littler people that I felt a little bit more equipped. I felt like it was a little easier to manage or control or at least heard. I don't know. There was something about it that I felt like I could get by on maybe some natural talent alone. And right now I'm in a place where I feel very needy. I feel like I need to be reading things. I need to be taking in as much help as I can get. And your Instagram has been that for me. You take on it's such a wide range of knowledge and expertise you have that you take on really difficult conversations, whether it's, race or ADHD or mental health, depression and anxiety, all of these things that might be really difficult to be up against. And it makes me feel grateful. I know that it makes a million other people feel grateful, as evidenced by your large following and all the enthusiasm and engagement that you get around these topics. We all feel a little desperate. I'm so grateful for you. It's an honor to have you on the show. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. That was such a sweet introduction and a sweet feedback. And I appreciate that because I think that was my biggest challenge coming into the Instagram social media realm from working in a hospital setting into private practice and how I'd gotten a lot of training in a lot of different areas. And everybody kept saying, you have to have a niche. You have to have one specialty area. And I kept thinking, but I don't like just one area. Yeah. I like a variety of areas. So yeah. I appreciate that. And that has benefited me and benefited others a lot because I don't just know about one thing. I have a lot of depth and breadth in a lot of different things. And I enjoy that. Absolutely. And it avoids burnout for me too, you know?
And when we're parenting, we're never only up against just one thing with our teenagers. We're up against a lot of things. So seeking out multiple people for all of the things feels, you know, a little stressful on top of a stressful situation, stress upon stress. What I love about how you do it is that there's so much care and there's so much nurture and there's so much respect for not just the parent, but also the child. You bring in science, which makes everything feel really validating that there's, you know, there's like actual, physical things, you know, undeveloped brains and prefrontal cortexes and all of these raging hormones that make these difficult situations that might seem kind of nebulous actually pretty factual. And so I just appreciate your whole approach. I would love for you to have an opportunity to give us a little bit of background about how you got here, you know, professionally. What are the steps that led you to your expertise? And what are you doing now? What are you enjoying most about your work? And then just personally, can you tell us a little bit about who and what you love?
Yeah, definitely. So, where do I even start? So I have a doctorate in psychology and I earned that in 2006. So I've been in practice in the field for quite some time now, and I'm also board certified in clinical child and adolescent psychology. So I have a private practice in San Antonio, Texas called A New Day Pediatric Psychology. I have a team of individuals, including people I supervise, an intern, people who go into the homes to help with behavioral concerns, as well as parent coaches, life coaches, and therapists. Mm-hmm. So I've been in private practice now for 7 years. So that's like the current platform and area that I'm in. Going backwards, before that, I worked for 10 years in a military hospital in San Antonio. That's where I got my training as a civilian. Mm-hmm. And that's where I did my pediatric psych training and where I got such a wide breadth and depth of knowledge and training because the military does a really good job of integrating psychology into medical areas. Mm-hmm. And I developed a big love for that. So a big part of my practice is parent coaching, but I also have a large part of my practice where I worked with kids and adults with medical issues from a psychological perspective.
Interesting.
So, so then before that, I have two master's degrees. I have one in psychology and one in education because this is my second career. So I worked in higher education for about 6 years, working in like residence life, admissions, career counseling, just all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
And before that, I was got my bachelor's in psychology. So after changing my major about six different times, I thought I wanted to go into fashion merchandising and business, because my mom has a children's clothing store. I worked in there as my first job as a kid. And I thought that's what I wanted to do. And after taking several courses in business, I said, no, business is not for me. Ironically, I'm in business now. So I wish I had gotten that degree.
Oh my goodness. So interesting. I love all of this. We need to put her store in show notes, by the way. We need to promote that as well.
Well, she's retired from it. So she had it for about 30 years.
And wonderful.
But it was a children's clothing store and I loved it because I would go on buying trips and with her and then do the merchandising for the window displays.
Yeah.
And I loved it. Loved it. So
now you're selling yourself instead of clothes. And
right, exactly.
I love it. Oh, that's wonderful. And so who and what do you love, Dr. Lockhart?
Yes. So I'm originally from the Caribbean. So I was born and raised in the Virgin Islands. So so I'm an island girl. So I'm a kind of a beach snob. When people tell me to check out a beach in the States, I was like, that is not a beach.
So fair enough.
So I'm from the island. So I grew up there, born and raised there. And I've been married for 25 years this September.
Congratulations.
And thank you. My husband and I always joke about like being married that long is like, wow, I've never done anything for that long. Like that's,
yeah, right.
That's
yeah.
huge. So we have two kids, a 13-year-old daughter and a 10-year-old son. I live in San Antonio, like I said. I love movies, food, fashion, and music. Like that's my stuff. So if I feel stressed out or need to unwind from my day, anything that involves those things is a perfect day for me.
You are a girl after my own heart. I tell you what, we would have a lot to sit and talk about and perhaps shop. Okay. Because there's something about, you know, all of these layered emotions and the complication of, I don't know, just reaching difficult people, you know, which is what we're going to talk about today, our teenagers, that I find so fascinating. Like I'm having the time of my life parenting right now. But it's not easy. And I like the challenge. I'm grateful for the challenge. I recognize that that might be unique and other people that I know and love are deeply, deeply struggling. So it felt really important to have you on the show. I want to dive into teens. I know you do so many things. And hopefully you'll come back because as I was going through the things that I was trying to decide, just go to Dr. Lockhart's Instagram page. We'll put everything in show notes, but you are going to find such a wealth of information. And it felt impossible to choose one thing to really, what I wanted to do, my hope was, is to just lay a good foundation about connection and communication and managing our emotions, kind of starting there. And then maybe getting into like a whole other episode on social media, anxiety and depression, you know? And so, but to just start, I feel like these teen years are reminding me so much of the terrible twos in a lot of ways, because, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way or as an insult to these kids that I love. What I mean is that I am dealing with a lot of big emotions, a time in their life where they are supposed to seek a little more independence. And all of these things, these big emotions and this age appropriateness of needing a little bit of separation is coming together to remind me of that time. Now, ironically, I joke that like I'm the weirdo that loved the terrible twos. I found it kind of fascinating. I found it entertaining, to be honest. And so now here I am again, except the consequences feel a little more dire. Because when you have a 2-year-old with big emotions seeking independence, maybe the worst thing that can happen is that they embarrass you in the checkout line at Target. When you have a teen with big emotions that's seeking independence, a lot can go wrong.
Yeah.
And so, and that's the panic, that's the neediness, that's the desperation that all of the people flocking to you feel. It's really, really important. And so I was just hoping that maybe we can talk about the, maybe just to start, if we can talk about this very unique time. Can you tell us a little bit, even if it's just pure science, can you tell us a little bit about this age and this unique time in their lives?
Yes, yes. So it's really fascinating that you brought up that the teenage years remind you of the toddler years, because I compare those two stages a lot, actually.
Oh, wow.
yes. Probably, I think it was like about a year ago, I actually had a series on toddlers and teens.
No way. Oh my gosh, I love it. I'm actually so, really glad to hear that, because it felt, I felt kind of rude saying it. So that you're saying it, I'm like, nope, I'm good.
No, it's not rude at all. And it's so true. And when I talk to people who specialize and work with toddlers or parents of toddlers, and we talk, there are a lot of similarities. So from a developmental and neurological brain perspective, what's happening in the toddler years, so say like between 2 and 5, around that time, there are surges in their brain growth and development that's occurring. And they are starting to gain a sense of autonomy and independence and realization that I'm a person separate from my parent or caregiver.
Yeah.
I'm not connected to them all the time. I can now walk on my own without them carrying me places. I can say no, because now I have language.
Yeah.
I can throw things because now I have control over my body. Yeah. I can hold up my head. I'm not this wobbly ball of mess, right? I can control my body. I can run away. I can dress myself. I can wipe my own bottom. I can feed my own self, right? It's like all this autonomy, and it feels good because, and that is a huge developmental stage
at
this stage.
Yeah.
It should feel good, right? That I'm not connected all the time. I don't have to be carried around. I don't have to scream and cry to get my needs met. I mean, they still will, but now I could use words. Now I have words. And then when you fast forward to the teen years, there are surges in their brain growth and development that are occurring. And really, there's some evidence that shows between ages 3 and 6 and 14 to 16, there's surges in brain growth. Like there's new neurons firing, new connections, new synapses. And at both of those stages is when it's most difficult, 3 to 6 and 14 to 16.
It's and so validating.
And so a lot of it is that same thing that, you know, that same stage in teenage years where I'm an independent person that starting to get their license, they can have more autonomy, they have access to the phone, they can have more time away from their parents, trips for sports or youth retreats or sleepovers. Like they have more autonomy, more independence. And now they can also have beliefs that are different from you. That they can dress in ways that you may not approve of, that they listen to music that you don't really care for. They support a politician or a type of policy that you're just like, what the heck? Like they now have these ideas because they can do their own research and they realize that I have opinions separate from you again. And so that's why those two stages feel so similar, because they are similar, actually.
Yeah. And so in the midst of all of that, you know, keeping connection with a toddler is a lot easier because they're still so needy. You know, they can't necessarily make themselves a sandwich. You know, they can tell me, no, I don't like that, but that, you know, they don't have a lot of other alternatives. And so that neediness component, well, our teenagers aren't as needy for us anymore. And yet you could also argue that they most certainly are. And so keeping connection with them so that we are the place that they keep returning to because they are still needy. You know, that connection is so crucial. I would love to hear from you and your expertise about what are the components of good connection and how do we maintain it? Are there barriers to good connection? Can we just talk about connection as a as a good foundation?
Oh, yes. That's a great question. And I think that is the foundation of having a positive relationship with your teenager is the connection. Yeah. And I think that's the lie that parents feed themselves, that their teenager doesn't want to connect.
Yes.
Like if they wanted to connect, why are they never home? If they want to connect, why are they prioritizing their friendships? If they wanted to connect, why are they always saying, get out of my room, I'm going through a phase? Like why are they doing these things then? And, you know, again, it's this push-pull. And I talk about this in one of my courses. There's this push-pull in the teenage years, especially with pushing you away because they want their independence, because they should, because that's their developmental stage, but then pulling you in because they still want to connect. They still want you in their life. They still want to be able to talk to you about things.
Because belonging is so important to our—
It is important.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. And I remember years ago, I had this teenager that I saw. She was being raised by her grandma. By her grandparents, both her grandparents. And she was she's about 15 and going through that phase and being around her friends, not being at home often. And she came to therapy and they were like, we feel disconnected from her. And she's like, well, I feel disconnected from you. And they're like, well, you're never home. And she's like, yeah, but when I'm home, you all never want to spend time with me. They're like, yeah, but when you are at home, you're on your phone. Yeah, but when I'm on my phone, but you, like it was like this, like they both wanted the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, you both want the same thing. They're like, yeah, but it doesn't seem that way. And I'm like, well, I tell parents that, again, toddlers, they need you. School age kids, 6 to 12, they really, they rely a lot on their parents for various reasons, right? But then when they get into the phase about 11, 12 years old, it's actually younger and younger now. They start to individuate. They start to become their own individual, where friends do become a higher priority. That's normal.
Yeah, right.
And I think what happens that parents often grieve that because it is a loss. Mm-hmm. Like I went from my little buttercup always wanting to be with me and hang out with me. And now like, oh, you're so cringe, mom, you know, you're so gross. Oh my gosh. That's so awkward. And it's like, you feel like you're moving further and further away from them. Yeah. And so, that's a big part of it. And I just did a presentation just last night to a group of parents in New York about this whole generational gap. Like, why is there such a generational gap? And we talked about that. And we talked about each generation. Mm-hmm. There's a thing. There's a culture that goes with that generation. And the generations are shrinking. They're shorter and they're advancing more quickly. Mm-hmm. So there is a bigger gap. Like the boomers or the Gen Xers who are raising the generation alphas, or they don't connect because of how different things are and what they're being exposed to.
So it's interesting because in a lot of ways I feel like kids are growing up slower in that they're getting their licenses later, they're leaving home later, they're getting married later, you know, they're doing all these things later. And then in other ways, they're growing up faster because of, you know, technology and all that they're exposed to. And so it's weird. There's such a weird dynamic of trying to understand each other and stay relatable. You told a story about, you know, kind of this miscommunication or this disconnect between a granddaughter and a grandmother, and they both want the same thing. And I was watching, it was on TikTok, which seems silly, but like this mom, she was laying in her bed. She's like resting up against the headboard and she's taking a video of her. It looks like a young adult daughter, like maybe 18, you know, 17, 18. So teenager, I guess. I don't know. Either young adult or teenager. Doesn't matter. But she's sitting in bed with her mother and she's on her phone and you know, she's looking at something and her mom takes the video and she says, did you just come in here to like look at your phone by me? And she was like complaining. And I was like, no, like
she's literally with you.
She's with you. Just be together. And maybe if the vibe is right, you could say, what you watching? You know, like show me, you know? And so don't you think a big part of connection is being interested what they're interested in? Like trying to learn something and bridge that gap?
Yes. And the thing, that's where the gap is happening because I'm a Generation Xer. And so the way that I was raised, the way that I grew up, the way that I interacted with adults and parents and all that kind of stuff is very different than what my kids are exposed to. They grew up in an age where technology has always been the thing. I mean, my son, who's 10, asked me the other day, he's like, when you were a kid and you needed to figure out a recipe, how did you figure it out if you didn't have Google?
Yeah.
And he's like, I was like, well, you just asked somebody. And he's like, what? Yeah. I was like, yeah, you just called them up on the rotary phone.
On index cards. Down,
right. On index cards where you call somebody up on the rotary phone. You're like, hey, I want to make this. What do I need? Right.
Yeah.
He's like, but then you had to go to the store to get it. Like, yeah, dude. Like, right. And so, yes, there's this sense of technology and fast pace. And yes, it is true. I see a lot of evidence that shows that kids are not launching as quickly. They're like failure to launch. So they're getting their license later, or they have no desire to get it, which is weird to me. Like, so I couldn't wait to get mine.
Oh my gosh, a hunk of freedom sitting in the driveway. Yes, what is happening? Yes.
Yeah. Right. So they get their license later. They're not as excited about going to college. And I don't think college is for everybody, nor do I think everybody needs to. But still, it's like they're not have a desire to go to college or the military or a job or moving out. They don't have this pull to want to do something else. They kind of want it to happen for them. I see a lot more of like they're waiting for an opportunity to hit. But maturity-wise, in terms of puberty, which we see that they are hitting it earlier. So they're developing earlier. They're looking older earlier. Yeah. They're more mature in their knowledge of things earlier. Mm-hmm. They want things that, you know, they're giving up dolls and toys earlier, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, one of my specialties early on in my career was doing a lot of play therapy, and I have an office full of toys, but I don't use them like I used to anymore because they just don't. I mean, I used to play with kids up until age 12 with dollhouse and board games, and that desire isn't even there anymore.
Yeah. And the thing is that technology is here to stay.
Yes.
We're not, this isn't a phase, you know? And so we're just going to have to make peace with it. We're going to have to, you know, handle this well. Again, like whole other episode, because that's a big one. I was laughing at, you know, the rotary phone or like picturing the index card, like splattered with butter over the years or whatever. Like our kids have literally never seen that. And bless our hearts, like printing out these pages of directions. How in the world did we ever get anywhere with these like pages of Google Maps, like holding it around like pirates? I mean, it's hilarious.
Well, I had a Thomas guide. I mean, when I, like I said, when I was in higher education, I was an admissions counselor and I would drive around California finding schools. And I had my big old spiral bound Thomas guide and highlighted my route. I'm like, how did you not get into an accident watching a book while driving on the 405?
My gosh,
you know?
Jeez. Yeah. It's a marvel we're alive.
Yes.
So another thing I think with connection, and then we can move on to some good communication practices, but I would love to hear your thoughts on this or your more researched and professional thoughts. But I have found a great way in by loving my teenager's friends and not pretending to love my teenager's friends, but actually extending some effort with that kid's really quiet and kind of grunts at me and, you know, but then it really just kind of extending a little more effort and seeing what my kid sees. I have been, I can tell that my kid in his own way is so appreciative, is so grateful for that. Like, and he wouldn't ever say it this way, but he's like, y'all come here. My mom loves us. You know, my mom's like delighted by us. And loving my kids' friends has been such a bonder between he and I. And I never knew that that fruit would come of it, but it really has. And I know, again, this is a whole other episode because who our teenagers are choosing to surround themselves with is a huge deal. We really want them to choose good friends. What do you think, just if we could, because again, I know it's a whole big topic, but like, what about the teenagers and their friends? Because you talked about how completely age appropriate is for them to actually choose them over us. And then how devastating that can be if it's done poorly.
Right. Well, and it's like what you mentioned earlier about being interested in what they're interested in and taking, taking interest in that. So if they're looking, want to find out about the latest TikTok trend or dance or like watching videos, certain videos, reality show video, like being interested and finding out why is that so appealing to them? Asking them about the video game that they're playing and doing it alongside them.
Yeah.
And so that takes that really makes a big difference in terms of connection. And everyone likes it when there is someone in their life that they care about that delights in what they delight in. That you're like, oh my gosh, I can't stand Roblox or Minecraft. Yeah, but if they delight in it, take an interest in it. And it's important too, because then you know what they're doing online. You can help keep them safe because now you're educated by them. And same thing with their friends. Like it's important a big part in knowing the decisions that your kids are making and the choices that they're making really goes back to their friendships, because friend groups are a huge influence on teenagers. Yeah. And so if you have no part in the friends that they have, you don't know their personalities, their home life, how they speak, how they act, how they dress, what they believe, like, you don't know what kind of influence your kid and your teenager is having. And so I think those are all important. And so making your home a place where they can come and be themselves, and they can chat, and they can eat, and they can enjoy themselves. So yes, that is absolutely important, especially because friends are such a priority for them. But then if they're giving you the privilege enough to want them to come into your home, then definitely get to know them.
Yeah, it feels like such an honor. So I know that a lot of times as parents, we intend connection, or we intend for our intentions are, is that connection is bonding, but sometimes I feel like that desire can feel like interference. And so I feel like a lot of times what needs to go along with connection is good communication, is letting our kids know that we want to, I don't know, just our desires for coming alongside, not overly controlling, kind of being let in without being overbearing. And so a lot of it just feels like a balancing act. And I think anytime with balancing acts, it's good communication. That is kind of what keeps things level. Can we, before we get into what is good communication, can we talk about some barriers? Like, what are some things that get in the way of good communication?
That's a good question. So I think a few things get in the way of good communication. One is, not listening. I mean, I think we hear, but we don't always listen. So not listening, whether it's because you're distracted, because you're not really listening for the true content of the message, or because you're interrupting, you know? So I think not listening, I think is a big one. I think not being genuinely interested in hearing the other person's opinion on what they have to say about it, that you think you're right, that I'm the grown up, I'm the older one, I'm more knowledgeable, so I know better than you. And so making assumptions that they have nothing of any value to contribute, I think that really gets in the way. I think sometimes there's like just a breakdown in perspective. Like sometimes you have a perspective on one thing, and the other person may have a perspective on another thing because of their exposure and your exposure, your history with it. Yeah. And so there's just like a breakdown because you're just not seeing it in the same way. I mean, I see that with like talking to my kids about math, you know, how math is taught differently. And so it's like, I'm trying to teach them. They change math. They're like, well, that's not how they taught me. I'm like, well, that's not the way I learned. How am I supposed to teach you if that's not the way I learned it? Google, how do you do that? You know, and so it's really, I think that can be a big barrier, you know, whether it's slang or methods of doing things or the way you understand things. So I think those are probably the big ones I hear.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking this is maybe kind of seems elementary or I don't know, too simple, but just being available. You know, I think that any time I'm like, okay, now's the time that we're going to have this really important talk, those are never really all that fruitful. It's the times that I'm kind of taken by surprise because just caught them at the right time in the kitchen, you know? And so having margin. And a lot of that's a privilege. So I don't, I hate to, make people feel judged or shamed about, I don't have that. You know, I'm working a lot of hours and don't have that. And then maybe getting more creative about how to do it, whether it's you're writing together, you know, maybe you're sharing a book of thoughts back and forth. I don't know. Maybe that is a little too complicated, but anyways, just the availability and having, the time and space to say, oh, I wasn't expecting this right now, but I'm listening.
Well, the connection can happen in many ways too. I mean, even if you don't have oodles of time, it could be a note that you leave for them at their bedside. It could be just letting them know, hey, I'm leaving for work. Hope you have a great day. I'll see you later. Or it could be a text message chain back and forth. Thinking about you today, just saw this super cute outfit. Like, oh, we need to check it out. Like just those little types of communications that creates bonding. And I tell people that like this theory of mind concept, where when someone knows that they're being thought of by you in your absence. So like when I used to do a lot of traveling for speaking and I would be away from my kids for 2-3 days and I would be like, I went to like FAO Schwartz when I was in New York City. That was so cool. When we go to New York, we have to visit. Like, oh, yeah. Cool. And I take pictures and send it to them. Like, yes. And I got this for you. Like, you're being thought of even when I'm not with you. Like,
and
that
so
is
easy.
Huge. Yes, that's huge. It's huge.
And, you know, this is, I feel like this is similar in nature or in vibe. My kids love hearing stories about when they were little. So it's like, you know what? Everything else is kind of hard to talk about right now, but I'm going to tell you this thing about you that delighted me when you were little. You know, like everybody loves to hear about themselves, you know? And it kind of gives them like, it's like this place in the family, you know? It's kind of just this drawing back in a way. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But that's just been a fun tool. I love what you said about being genuinely curious. Genuinely curious, because kids can sniff out strategy, right?
Oh, but totally.
Like, genuinely curious about what your kid is telling you. You know, and I feel like not being all that shockable is maybe a component, like not overreacting, because I think about all the things that my kids need help with. You know, they need help with their friends. They need help with a lot of the things that are kind of happening over their phone. Maybe it's social media or like something went awry or I don't know. I mean, and they're so afraid that like we're going to overreact and take that thing. We're going to take those friends. We're going to take that phone. We're going to take that connection that they have, that they're not sharing with us the things that they really need the most help with. So do you mind speaking to, I don't know, maybe a calmness in our communication, like not overreacting?
That's important because if I think sometimes teenagers try to get a rise out of their parents, parents.
Interesting.
And, you know, and, because it's kind of like they're testing the relationship. They're testing to see that you say you're going to be there for me. You say that you support me. You say you unconditionally love me. So what if I share this? And how am I going to react? How are you going to react to me? And so I think a big thing is why we have a reaction, why we feel triggered by things they say and do is because our nervous system gets a shock. It's like a jolt.
Thank you. Yes. Good.
So that's why we start to hyperventilate, why we feel like we're having a mini panic attack, why our breathing becomes shallow, why our heart is racing, because it's like an assault on our nervous system, like literally.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, that's anything, whether you just found out your kid, you know, ran up the cell phone bill or got a tattoo you didn't want them to have or snuck out the house, whatever it is, it's normal to have a reaction like that. So I don't want us judging ourselves for having a reaction to a negative behavior or a behavior we perceive as negative. So I think one of the first steps when you hear something shocking or you discover something shocking is to take breath. Yeah. Like it feels like, well, that doesn't work. Yes, it does. Because if your nervous system is getting assaulted, one of the things that helps that is breathing. And that's what I teach people who have panic attacks or anxiety is belly breaths, diaphragmatic breathing, a calm breath. Before I do like a big presentation or a workshop, before I log on or start, I take a breath, just calming, centering myself before having that difficult conversation and responding to what you just found out or what your teenager just said. Pause and take a breath. Because one thing that I teach parents over and over again is that in our brain is complex. It does everything, obviously. So we have logical reasoning and we have emotional reasoning. And logic tells us things like to our teenager, you should know better. Why would you do that? You know how that impacts me. That hurts my feelings. Like we say all these things that are very heady, logical.
Yeah.
But then emotions are at play. And many times when the teenagers are sharing things, they're sharing it from a place of emotion. And then we interject logic. Yeah. And that doesn't mix well. It's like oil and water does not mix well. So we have to meet emotion with emotion, but not in an escalated type of way, but in a calm way. And that's where that co-regulation piece comes in. I have to lend my calm to help regulate or balance out the situation. And that's hard to do.
Yeah. Emotions are contagious though.
And emotions are contagious.
Of
course. Of course. But that's why it's so important that when you hear something like that, you're allowing yourself to take a pause, take a breath. You don't have to respond right away. You can say, well, that was a lot. Thanks for sharing. I think I need a few minutes or about an hour to think about how I want to respond to this.
Yeah.
Like every situation does not demand an immediate reaction.
Yes.
You don't have to.
Oh, it's so good. That's
you don't have to. Now, if your two-year-old is running out into the street, you're not going to like, let me pause. No, that's ridiculous. You're going to, of course, come to their rescue and come to action. But an information that has come to you after the fact does not demand an immediate reaction.
So good.
And I think so often as parents, we think we have to know. I have to let them know that they were wrong. I have to let them know how disappointed I am. No, they don't. They already know, which is why there's shame there. Right. They don't need to hear that response immediately.
And so, you know, the deep breaths, I'm a yoga instructor. And so like, this means a lot to me. But it's like tricking our brain that, that danger has passed, you know, it's like, we're good now. And so, you know, taking that moment, what it is though, is it's having something in your pocket that's a skill. I mean, and so we need to build our own skills so that we can teach our kids these skills. I don't have to react immediately, and neither do you. Like, we have more options than fight or flight. We have more choices than that. And that is so valuable, but it's skill building. I feel like one of the biggest components of needing those skills is during conflict. So we've talked about connection. We've talked about communication. Can we talk about good conflict? I feel like this is a perfect segue into what are the components of a healthy argument? What are the things that we need to avoid? Why does it matter? Why does it matter that we not lose our cool? Help us.
Yes. So a big part of conflict I find in the teenage years is many times I see a lot of teenagers who connect through conflict. Hmm. And they say things that are like, why would they say that? And it's like, well, it was a way of connection. Yeah, but there's other ways to connect. Right. But they may not feel like they're being heard. They may not feel connected because they feel like they're busy.
Requires vulnerability.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so sometimes bringing up that conflict and creating that drama helps them to feel more connected. Yeah. It feels very kind of at odds with one another, but I see that a lot. And I saw that a lot during the pandemic when we were on lockdown, lots of families connecting through conflict because it's stimulating. It's exciting. Like when you have no movies, no concerts, no traveling, no nothing.
Interesting.
And you're just stuck at home. I mean, you need something exciting. Let's create drama.
Okay. Oh, I have to interject this. It's funny, not important, but they're literally my husband and I did a TikTok together. It was a voiceover. It wasn't our material, but it was like, she was complaining about something and he keeps going, "You're right. You're right. You're right." And she goes, and she takes a minute, her facial expressions are hilarious. And she goes, "Well, now what the hell are we going to do? If we're not going to argue." I mean, just so stinking funny, but you're right. There is, there's a tantalizing component. I mean, sorry to be like off topic or like put something in another category, but it's like makeup sex, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, because and that's where I think why we're so drawn to reality TV and novellas and soap operas, because there's this sense of like, and we act that out in our teenage and college relationships. It's like, oh, you don't love me, and slam the door and slam, you know, whatever. Oh, these things is like this. So, and it's like, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, here's a flower. Come back to me. Oh my gosh, I think I could prove. And it's like all that, that's that conflict, that drama. And now I feel connected. And so that plays out in the parent-teen relationships as well too. And if we're not careful, they're going to suck us right into that kind of drama. And that, and now they feel like, oh, now you care about me because now we're having a fight. Now we're yelling about this.
That's right.
Yeah. That's right. But it's not the best way to connect.
I was just sitting with one of my oldest friends on the staircase. It's a long story, but I was in a position, I'm grateful for it, to be able to kind of come alongside him and be able to offer some suggestions of, you know what, you're really good at letting people know when you're angry or when you don't care. And the thing about your anger is that there's something underneath it. You know, it's pointing to something different. And the thing about that you don't care is that it's not true. And so if we could get to what is true and what's underneath anger, because these are all just responses to something different, if we could have the real conversation, if you and this person that you care about could have the real conversation, I think we could actually get somewhere, because this adult in your life is responding to you looking like you don't care about anything.
Yep.
Except that's not true. And so we're not having the conversation that needs to be had. So what do we replace all this with, Dr. Leichhardt? Yeah. What do we do instead?
Yes, I think that was a beautiful conversation that you had with him. And that's often what I guide parents and teenagers in, is like always getting to the root of the conflict.
Yeah.
Because so often as parents, and I say this so much, like we focus so much, and myself included, we focus so much on, because we get triggered and we react to the behavior on the surface. We see the behavior, we see the rolling the eyes, the tone, the sassiness, the like all of these things that we see, and we react to that. And instead, we have to find out what's behind that. What is driving that behavior? What is the need driving that? Like, what is the vulnerability? What is the hurt, the embarrassment, the frustration, the not feeling good enough, the depression, the isolation? Like, what is it that's really driving it? Because it's easier. I don't know if it's easier, but it feels safer to show the anger. It feels safer to show the attitude. Because if I believe you don't like me anyway, or I'm a burden to you, or I cause problems in this family, or I stress you out. If I already know that's my identity and how you view me, why should I be anything different? And right. I see so many movies with that theme. It's heartbreaking to see. I remember when I saw Zootopia years ago, and it was interesting because it's this whole world of prey and predator animals that are like humans that can speak and interact. Uh-huh. And there was this character, he was the fox, and he told the bunny, he was like, I remembered when I was little, people said, if all they see is a fox and that's all I am is a threat, why be anything else? And I was like, oh man. And I think that's what happens in conflict, is that our teenagers adopt this identity that we kind of give to them.
Right.
Oh, you're the smart one. You're the athletic one. You're the pretty one. You're the persistent one. You're the lazy one. We have all these things, and we may not say it directly, but we say, oh, you never pick up your stuff. Oh, you always mess up. Oh, there you go again. And we say these things, and then they adopt that. So yeah, the conflict that comes out of that is because I already think you have this view of me. So why should I show up as anything else?
Right, right. So if during conflict, you know, one of the big things is not having the real conversation, like we're talking about, like having a more, you know, getting underneath the thing.
Yes.
I feel like another thing that takes things like wildly off course is staying calm.
Yes.
And I just want to be like straight up and honest that it is when I yell that it is most effective. It's when like things change. So I can use all my skills and I can do all the things that I'm supposed to, and then I can lose my mind, and then that's when things change. So if you could reiterate, and I will listen very closely, if you could reiterate why staying calm is important, I think a lot of us would really love to hear it.
Yes. Well, that's a great point, because I think what happens is there's a mutual training ground that happens with parents and teens. Mm-hmm. We are training them and they train us. So what happens is I tell you something and you don't listen to me. And I tell you calmly after taking a breath and you're just like, whatever, mom. And I tell you again. And like by the fifth time, I was like, what? And then now you're yelling. And now they're like listening, because what happened to their nervous system? Your yelling triggered their nervous system. Now they're on high alert. It's like they're under threat. Yeah. They're under threat. So then what now you've taught their brain is that I don't have to listen to you until you're losing your mind. And that's why they listen, because they've been trained by you as a parent to only listen when you've reached your breaking point. And when you've escalated, and now they can be like, oh, I'm under threat, like being a cornered animal.
Right.
So the way that we address that is pause, take the breath. Do I have to respond to this right away? And we identify the need behind what's going on, the real need behind the conflict. And we speak to that need in an empathic way. So for example, I know that you feel that things haven't been going well lately. And I know that you've been very frustrated with what's going on in our home. Like, you speak to that need, you speak to the emotion, you speak to the real issue that's going on, and say, you know, I don't like yelling, and I know you don't like yelling. I don't enjoy nagging at you, although it seems like I do not enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I feel like every time we come home, every time we hit Sunday night, every time it's the evening hours or time to get off the devices, I feel like we're always at conflict and in odds with one another.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a problem. Let's find a solution to that problem.
Yeah.
So I think engaging in empathic communication, being calm about it, and then stating the problem, and then engaging them in a collaborative solution to the problem. So that way it's not just you barking your commands at what needs to change. Mm-hmm. It's that I trust you enough to have a solution to our mutual problem,
yes,
and that we mutually benefit from it, so that I benefit from it because now I have a clean house or whatever it is. But then you benefit from it because you feel more regulated. You know where your stuff is. You feel connected to me. And so I think that collaborative solution after speaking to the emotion in a calm way is important.
Yeah.
Because in that way, they feel like you trust me to come up with a solution to this situation too.
Right. And because, so often when we're yelling over about something, it's so often that the fight isn't about taking out the trash or curfew.
No.
It's about that I feel overwhelmed and need help. And you don't know a lot of my life, you know, like
right.
I have things in my life going on that, you know, that my kids don't necessarily know about or they should, you know, and then you feel like I am overbearing or, encroaching on your freedoms or whatever, you know, you feel over-controlled or bossed around. And so we just need to get to, I was at a basketball game with, one of my teenagers and he had a friend with us at the basketball game. And during halftime, they were like, hey, we're going to go to the bathroom. And I'm like, cool. And they go to the bathroom, except they didn't come back by the time the second half had started, which, you know, was kind of annoying because I knew that they were just like, you know, kind of trolling this college basketball game. And that helped them like feel independent and have some freedom. And I was like, you know what? It's actually kind of a safe way to have freedom. And they're not like in any harm right now. And so, and I'm just not going to nag about that right now. I'm kind of frustrated because they're probably in a corner on their phones looking at something and these tickets were expensive and it's actually a really good game. So that's frustrating, but they feel independent right now because they're in a big arena, safe. And, you know, so I'm just going to kind of let it go, like choosing those battles. The next thing I know, I'm watching this basketball game, making this difficult choice at the time to leave him alone. Next thing I know, he's on the Jumbotron with his friend in the student section because this kid has worked himself courtside and he's like pumping his fist, cheering at the game, you know? And so I feel like there's just a lot of things where we're not like taking into account each other's lives and like giving each other a benefit of the doubt.
Yes.
It's like we can just assume the worst. And then when things escalate, it becomes the worst, you know, just like what you're saying, you live into these places where people have you pegged. I have a question about if things have gone off course, what's the reparation? Like, is it too late? Like, what are, you know, once things have gone wrong, how do we fix it? How do we bring it back in?
Well,
we can end on this, but yeah.
But I think right before I answer that too, I think one of the things that cause conflict that leads to when we talk about the reparations part is I think we have to also tap into values, our family values and personal values, because I think why sometimes we get triggered and why we react to certain things or they don't or they do is because we have different values. And again, remember, these are teenagers who start to have their own opinions and thoughts about things. So maybe they value popularity or entertainment or friends or beauty or adventure and independence, but we value something completely different. And so we're thinking about things very differently, right?
Yeah.
And so I think why people often get offended by other people's actions is because they're violating your values. But people don't have to follow your values.
Yes, that's so good. Yeah.
They don't have to. They have their own. Now, would it be a easier place for you if they had the same values? Absolutely. But that's not how it works. So I think that I see that at the root of a lot of conflict. I hear a lot of parents saying, is it ever too late to repair a broken relationship with a teen? Because I do hear that often.
Yeah.
No, it is never too late. I meet with adults as well in therapy who have broken relationships with their parents and they still desire to connect. So it's never too late.
Yeah.
So I think we have to get out of our mind that, you know, your teenager hates you, your young adult hates you, and it's too late. It's never too late. Most people desire a connection with their parent, even in the worst circumstances, they do.
Yeah.
And so I think that often when we ask about consequences to poor decisions, I think we're actually asking about punishment. And although punishment can be very effective, it's not helpful because, again, we're not dealing with the real issue. We're actually just punishing the behavior.
Yeah.
And we're not building
skills
to
do things differently. Yeah.
Right. Right. So I think that we have to look at when they do something that's truly a problematic behavior. I think that the consequence needs to be in alignment with whatever that is. So it's not like a big go-to for most parents is give me your phone. You lose your phone for a month or a week or whatever it is. And it has nothing to do with the actual behavior, but I think it has to be something that is skill building and that the consequence should maintain connection, something that is restorative, that repairs the problem, right? Yes. So you copied homework off your friend and you didn't do it on your own. Okay, then we're going to start from scratch and do it over again. And you're going to show me that you understand the information. So not no TV for a week. That has nothing to do with the thing that they just did.
Yeah.
Or they broke something in the home. And rather than saying, oh, you know, you're grounded. No, then they have to work and repair that item, you know, whatever it is. So allowing your child to your teen to make up and repair those things, because when they make a mistake, they know they have. And a lot of times many teens live in shame, which is why they go into denial or they get an attitude or they try to avoid. So more lecturing and more nagging and more punishment is only going to bring up more shame. It's not going to actually get to the root of whatever it is. So I think we have to be more creative with it and not think about just going to a punishment, taking away TV, grounding, no friends, that kind of stuff. Really looking at what's the need that drove this behavior? What's a skill that maybe they're missing in this area? Like cleaning up they never clean up their room. Well, maybe they're missing a skill of organization.
Yeah.
Maybe they get overwhelmed by it. So they need your help in knowing how to clean a room. It is hard to clean a room.
Right. Right. This sounds kind of silly, but I literally was like I didn't even go upstairs because it stressed me out so bad. It was like instant anxiety walking up the stairs because it was a disaster. And then I realized like my kids actually didn't have enough like dresser and drawer space to put stuff. Like it kind of wasn't their fault. Like that's on me. They're not like buying themselves dressers. So thank you for that. That's really good.
Yes.
I don't know if this is like myth or legend or actual, and I didn't expect to say it, so I didn't look it up. And so I apologize if it's not entirely truthful, but I think there is like an African village where when someone has done wrong, when someone has misbehaved in some way, that they are brought in instead of pushed out. And then they are told wonderful things about themselves and that this thing isn't you. This thing that happened, that is not you. These things are you. And just what a different experience that is.
Yeah. I have read about that as well.
Yeah. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah. And it's completely counterintuitive to what we tend to do. We tend to push people out.
Yeah.
Tell them that you've been ostracized or you go away or you should be ashamed of yourself. We're not pouring into them. And it's, you know, but again, it's that generational thing that we've been passed on over the years, how kids are viewed, how independence is viewed, how adults are viewed. Mm-hmm. And we need to break some of that teenagers deserve to be spoken to and treated with respect, and spoken to as if they do have a brain and they have thoughts about things because they do. And so it's just a different mindset because a lot of parents I speak to is like, I have to respect them. They got to respect me. It's like, it's a two-way thing.
Yeah.
It's a two-way thing.
Yeah. Well, I love how this conversation has come full circle talking about connection, communication, conflict, and now resolving conflict that maintains connection. That wasn't necessarily my intention, but what a beautiful thing. I'm so grateful for you. We're doing a lot because we're raising these people who still need us so much, and yet they have just enough life experience to make them think that they know all of the things. And so it's just a funny time in all of our lives and professionals like you that take this on with such care and compassion and respect are greatly, greatly needed. And it is all my pleasure to just share with all of the people, whoever is listening, whether it's Instagram, TikTok, what have you, to say, come here, you know, just come here and keep coming here, returning here, scroll, like look deeper, because I guarantee you that Dr. Lockhart has taken on a topic that you need. Whatever it is likely in the highlights. So can you tell us how and where to follow? And do you have any fun projects in the works? Like how can we support you?
Yes. Thank you so much. So I think probably one of the best places is my website at anewdaysa.com. And that's my practice. That's my website. They can find out a lot of stuff about what's going on. It has a link to the parent classes that I have. I have a variety of parent courses. I have an online parent community where you have access to all the courses. We meet as a group for group parent coaching once a month. And it has parents of kids of all ages too, all the way up to young adults. And so that's probably the best place. And then Instagram, of course, at dr.annlouise.lockhart. I'm very active there. I'm somewhat on TikTok, but not as much. And then of course on Facebook at A New Day Pediatric Psychology. So there's a few places, but probably the website and Instagram is probably the best places.
Awesome.
Well, and then I for projects, I have challenges that go on all the time that I talk about different things. And there's some really cool things that I have in the works that I can't quite reveal quite yet. So if you follow along, then you'll see those things.
Yay. Excited to hear. I know that there are so many more things to discuss. This feels like a really great start. I so hope you'll come back.
Of course.
Specifically, I feel like our audience is really interested in social media and mental health and addictions.
That's a good one.
And so I just so hope that we can keep the conversation going. You are a treasure, and this has been a delight. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Allison.
Hello, Beefinator. Welcome, welcome.
Hey, hey, hey. Glad to be here.
So I am a huge fan of Dr. Ann Louise Lockhart, and now you are too, right?
Oh my gosh. So much wisdom. So obviously I'm following her on the gram now and just taking notes.
Soaking it all up because she covers so many things. I mean, I had a little bit of on stage anxiety when it was, I was trying to like list all of the things that she does on her Instagram page. And it's one of those situations where it's like, there's a jillion and you can only think of two. So anyways, but I mean, everyone head there quickly and just see how much she covers. I love it so much. We know that we are just thick in the middle of raising all these kiddos.
Oh my gosh. I mean, beef. Separate and apart entirely from our own biological kids, it is impossible to talk about teenagers right now without talking about how many extra non-biological teenagers are in your house right now.
Yes, so true. I love every second of it. They've been definitely piling in like puppies lately.
I mean, last time we talked on the phone, I think you counted 10 extra to your 5. When you were like counting heads because you're about to make dinner, let's just start there. I mean, you don't even like making dinner, and now you're doing it for like 10 extra kids. And not just kids, but like all of them are teenagers and bottomless pits. And you're not just doing dinner, but you're doing breakfast and lunches and a jillion snacks as well.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't even realize until recently you're driving your kids' friends to and from activities that your kids don't even participate in.
Yeah.
And then those logistics are the easy part, right? Because you are, as you do with all people, but I feel it's extra, an extra gift to be able to do it with teenagers, that you're seeing them uniquely where they are. Forming these authentic relationships with them, forming these deep, authentic, complicated relationships with their parents, all for the sure. while like making sure your own biological kids are comfortable with it all, because it's a lot of, you know, new and a lot of people, and it's sincerely incredibly moving. You know, I was remembering that like years ago you were praying for your house to be like the go-to house. I feel like God was listening and maybe chuckled and was like, watch this, let's do this. Here we are.
Oh, thank you for all of that. And as I've been kind of sharing what our summer situation is, I have had so many friends, just other moms, say thank you. And it's so validating, because it really, these situations, and I have to have so much discretion because I deeply respect these kids and their families. And every situation is so completely different. Some of it completely detailless, you know, a lot of it, a ton of details. Some of it just cut and dry, easy, that, you know, we have a lot of kids in our house right now, and hey, me too, you know. But, you know, kids absolutely deserve their privacy. And so there's not a whole lot that I can talk about, but it has just been an amazing thing to have other adults say, hey, I can't do that right now. Like, I'm not in a space to do that right now. Because they have a job that requires them to be, you know, to not be home. And so I can, and I love it. And it is filling me full. I absolutely love it. It is a complete marvel to me about why, cooking dinner for my own family is just such a labor, you know, like such a, I don't know, labor of love, but like, this just feels a little lighter because I don't know if it's the urgency. I don't know if it's that it feels really necessary or I feel really needed instead of just wanted. I don't know, but I am loving every second. And I feel like this village, you know, we say that. And instead of it being just kind of this cool idea, I have just learned that it's necessary. It's like what's supposed to be. Not just this thing that would be cool if we could accomplish it, but like, no, it's how it was intended. And so I was sending Blaze off to camp yesterday, to summer camp, and it's his first time. And that's a big deal. You know, I'm sending him off to sleep overnight. And so he's leaving with a dear friend that mothers him and is so lovely. Mm-hmm. And she's taking him, which breaks my heart because I am not being the one setting up his bed. They're going to video and we're going to FaceTime. And I've had plenty of talks with Blaze about it. And I'm kind of killing his vibe that I'm telling him that I'm sad I'm not going to be there. Cause he's like all pumped to ride in the car with his friend and whatever. Yeah. Anyways, I realize I'm killing his vibe and I'm like, okay, I just need to kind of back up and let this thing happen and it's fine. Mm-hmm. But the truth is that I cannot, it's the campus 3 hours away and I cannot leave my house for 6 hours at a time with 12 teenagers in it. And so it was, I just needed to be home. Like this is our situation right now. And so anyways, this is happening. And my friend who's taking my kid to camp. Okay. And setting up his bed, his twin bed and kissing him goodbye. She says, I've been praying for these boys all week. And I'm like, thank you so much because I haven't at all, you know? And so, like, on it, like I haven't at all. Right. I've thought about it. I've like packed for him and I'm sure that there was like, that was with some intention, some loving intention. But the truth is that she was putting a lot of diligence into that while I was doing this and we need each other. I was sending her a text and I wanted the text to be, we need each other so badly. And then I was like, no, we need each other so well. Like I want us to need each other well, you know? And so anyways, the whole village thing, it's just how it's supposed to be. It's like going to yoga and leaving and you're like, wow, why do I feel so great? And it's because everything came into harmony for the first time, probably in a while, your mind, your body, and your spirit, it all started working together at the same time. And you realize, oh, that's not just a nice thing. It's how it's like supposed to be. So
100%.
I'm all for the village, man.
I love that. And I love thinking about when your friend said that there's no, I'm sorry, or I missed something. It's like, thank you. All you wanted is for a place to be prayed for and it's done. It's done.
Yes, it's
right?
done.
And I was doing this other thing with my gifts that I need to be focusing on right now that has uniquely come to me. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're doing. So I love that. Super grateful for that. We're going to need to talk about who that is so that I can pray for them too.
Absolutely.
But you know, when I've been thinking about your house and everything that you guys are doing right now and thinking about the village concept, I think, you know, we've heard that all along. And I think we adopted it as we became parents and arranged play dates, you know, we loved our kids' teachers and coaches and all the other people in their lives. But what has occurred to me is that I think when our kids were littler, the village was more for us, the parents, or at least we thought of it that way.
Yeah.
The way that like certain adults filled gaps. That was like for our sanity, right? like I can't do this. You do this now. But now I'm just learning that it seems like the village is more for the kids. Right.
Yeah.
I get to know the details of the conversations that you've been having, and how you've been loving, and beef. I mean, if villages make people stronger, there are about 15 or more teenagers that are getting stronger every single day because they've allowed their village to be expanded by your family, right? And you guys are getting the opportunity to be a part of their lives and vice versa. So it's just a shift for me on what the village is about.
Yeah. Thank you so much. That's really nice. But I really do wish that there was, the stigma was gone. And maybe we're getting better. I mean, I hope so, because I feel like it's more and more needed. Like, people are becoming more and more isolated, you know, whether it's because of technology or just kind of getting out of some pandemic ruts or whatever. But right. Because things are becoming more and more isolated, we need each other more and more. And so to get rid of any stigma where it's like, oh, I need help, that must mean I'm doing this wrong. Like, right. I hate that idea. Like, right. I need help because we're supposed to need help, you right. know? So sometimes if I have something to offer because I am home, or I do get to work from home, or I do actually enjoy people this age and, right. you know, have some talents for conversation or whatever, you know, because right. those things are in place. I wish that it didn't feel invasive to be like, hey, I have this. Mm-hmm. Do you need it? And I wish that it didn't feel shameful to say, hey, I don't have this. Mm-hmm. Can I borrow it? Right. I wish that that were, instead of being some sort of like giant favor, that it was just what was expected. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just more of a celebration of codependence rather than independence, right? Hey. You and I have always said we're happily codependent. So yeah. I'm glad we're talking about it. I hope that it just brings awareness to everybody that's listening, and we can all be a little more codependent on our villages.
Amen. And the more, I feel like the more we open up people, like all people, to a variety of circumstances, like a variety of different homes, a variety mm-hmm. of different relationships and ways to talk and ways to learn, just variety, diversity. It's yep. like you can have circumstances, and some of them may be good and some of them may be bad, but we don't need to be defined by any one okay. thing, because we have this whole collection of things. So okay. There's so many more advantages to just linking elbows and doing this thing, because this is impossible alone.
Amen.
Amen. All right. Love you, Beef.
Love you. Bye.
I am so, so grateful for you, listener. If you liked this episode, could you please do me a favor and hit subscribe and leave a review? It really helps the show grow, and I would be so appreciative. Thank you so much to our guests who share their gifts so generously with us, and a special thank you to Taylor Schroll, who does so much behind the scenes to make the show great. If it weren't for him, I would still be in my closet with my iPhone. You can follow along at Forte Catholic as well. That's Taylor's show where I show up now and again. And to keep up more regularly, please follow along on Instagram at Allison M. Sully, or TikTok at Sullivan Family TikTok. See you next week.
Today's show was a production of Allison Sullivan in conjunction with the Forte Catholic Podcast Network. For more great Catholic podcasts, head on over to fortecatholic.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.